Hi, podcasters. This is Andy Studna, Associate Editor for Applied Clinical Trials, and I'm here today with our Editor-in-Chief, Lisa Henderson. For today's episode, we are speaking with Kim Gentile, Senior Vice President, Clinical Operations for Biohaven Pharmaceuticals.
So Kimberly has been with Biohaven since it was founded in 2014. She previously worked for Bristol Myers Squibb and other companies in clinical trials roles throughout her career. And we wanted to have Kim on the podcast to discuss her current position for a company that currently has a lot going on in the phase three space. And we also wanted to talk about Kimberly's career. So thank you for joining us today, Kim.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you, Kim. So as Lisa said in her part of the intro, I want to start off with your career in clinical trials. And obviously, you've worked your way up into the position you hold now. So how did you find clinical trials as a career? And then how did your career end up progressing?
So yeah, I've been in the industry for a little over 30 years, which is kind of amazing to me sometimes when I think about how long it's been. And it really started off in a way that I wasn't expecting. So I started my career working for a small phase one clinical trials center in Boston, where a friend of mine had an opportunity to work in the data management department there as a data coordinator. And I really didn't have any idea about clinical research, but I was just getting out of college and I thought I would give it a try. So I started working in a phase one unit. I worked with the other pharmaceutical companies that came in and working with patients or subjects that came in that were normal, healthy volunteers looking for work in the phase one area. A lot of them come in and do our clinical trials in phase one. And that kind of jump-started my career and got me interested in clinical research in general. And then from there, I was able to bounce around a little bit. So I didn't take a regular trajectory where I just went, you know, straight up. I worked at a small company that did oncology research. So it was a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma company where I worked in the data management department. After that, I left to go and work in HIV research. So this was in the early 90s where AIDS and HIV were, you know, devastating illnesses that basically brought death to people. It wasn't something you could live with then. So that was super exciting to work on some of the early medications that kept people alive and made the illness into something that is, you know, can be managed lifelong. From there, I worked in a CRO. So I went to a CRO and worked as a clinical research associate where I went to different clinical trial sites and helped the investigators and doctors run clinical trials. And then I spent a majority, a good amount of my time at Bristol Myers Squibb, where I was in the clinical operations group for a little over 14 years before I left there and helped our CEO Vlad start up Biohaven as a company in 2014. So that was about 8 years ago. So I've had a little different trajectory. I've done different things, whether it was data management, site management, working as a CRA, and then working as a project manager and working up the ranks within a big pharmaceutical company, and then coming to Biohaven and being able to bring all that knowledge with me to help us get to where we are today.
Hey, great. So sticking with your own career, I'm assuming that going from one of the top 10 largest pharmas to a smaller sponsor is different. So can you elaborate on what some of those differences may be?
Yeah, it's definitely different, Andy. So, you know, you're in a big pharmaceutical company. You have so much support. You have so many people that know, have so much knowledge. There's always somebody to go to. So there's always a department head, someone in a department that knows what you need to know at the time to manage your clinical trials the way that you need to, whether it's a regulatory, whether it's clinical safety, pharmacovigilance. There's just a lot of outlets for you to go to and get information. I think one of the biggest things that hit me starting off Biohaven is it was just me and our CMO at the time, who was part-time. So we didn't have the internal resources, but because of the industry that I've been in and how much experience I had and the people and the relationships that I made, I knew what I needed to know and was able to find people that could help me. We used a lot of consultants in those days. I think it was super, super fun and exciting to come to a small company, but I'm really glad I did it in that order where I was at a big company. I think one of the most important things is knowing what you don't know and who to ask. And I think that afforded me that opportunity and being able to come here and work through some of the challenges of a small company with one or two people to start with.
As you have progressed through the industry, have you noticed any gender inequities or observed any barriers because you're a woman?
You know, I think I personally have been lucky enough not to have experienced that. I've worked in companies where it didn't seem to me that gender mattered, and I was in roles that really, I had great mentorship and great leadership to be able to lead me regardless of my gender. I think maybe it does exist in some companies, but I haven't actually had to deal with that myself. And again, I've been lucky enough to work with great leaders that it was never something that would block something that I wanted to do. So I think I've been super lucky and been able to really thrive regardless of who my mentor was, what gender they were, or the fact that I'm a woman.
Now, speaking of leadership and leaders like you just mentioned, what kind of leader would you say you are yourself? And how has leading been through this era of COVID the past few years?
So yeah, I think I'm a leader that really, really tries to empower my team to work independently, make decisions at levels that they can make them where they're comfortable making them, but also making sure they know that I'm always here to support them if they need it. I think Biohaven as in general has a really good culture for that. And we really value teamwork, high performance that really creates value for our patients, our shareholders, our company. And all the employees in my group really help them thrive in their role. So give them a lot of mentorship. I think, as I said before, I personally always know what I don't know and I know who to reach out to. And I think as a leader, that's good for the people that work with me to see. So that people, first of all, aren't afraid to ask questions, aren't afraid to make mistakes. We're all going to make mistakes. And, you know, really work as a team to solve any issues that come up. I think COVID has definitely been a challenge in all aspects of the world and any industry. I think we're seeing that you're in, it's been a challenge. I think in our industry, we had to really think on our toes and we had to figure out how do we do what we do, but do it a bit differently. I think one of the biggest challenges for us as a small company is we had some clinical trials that were going on that were in rare illnesses. And these are patients that are already compromised. We had trouble getting them to their clinical trial sites. And, you know, day after day, having these issues that come up that you're never expecting and have to figure out how to handle them. So I think it gave us some opportunities to be able to do things a little differently, such as having the phlebotomist go to the patient and have their blood drawn to make sure that all their safety things were okay, rather than the patient having to come into the clinic. Sometimes they couldn't, sometimes they were sick, the clinic people were sick, or the investigator site just closed during COVID. So I think although it was a challenge, it also gave us some opportunities in industry to kind of change the way we do things. And sometimes for the good, I think that there were some good things that came out of that. I think we can be more flexible and we know we can, because we got through COVID, we didn't stop treating our patients. They continued to stay on our drug. We continued to try to keep our clinical trials going. Definitely challenging, but I think it brought a lot of opportunities with it.
So that's a really important point that has been coming up a lot in speaking to other people and everything in clinical trials, that the lessons that you learned dealing with the patients during COVID, you know, that you can incorporate it now into your trials. So do you see that? Do you think that that's what, how you will start designing your trials, like build that in from the beginning?
Yeah, I think we should. I think as an industry, we should. I think, you know, people get set in their ways and we do what we've always done. And I think I like to try to think outside the box anyway. And I think that actually, and there are some clinical trials that don't lend themselves to it as easily. If you think of an oncology trial where you're getting an infusion, it's not as easy to do. But some of the trials, whether it be a migraine trial or some other clinical trial where patients can be seen more on an outpatient basis, I think we need to think about it. And maybe it's not that the entire trial is done remotely, but pieces of it can be to make it easier on the patient. You think of patients that have trouble getting to your clinical trial site, whether they be in a wheelchair, whether they have trouble walking, any types of things like that. And also, you know, you think of pediatric trials where you have parents that are trying to manage their kids that are sick and their jobs and their lives. And, you know, maybe there's a better way that we can do that. I've been thinking of ways to be able to do, you know, maybe your first visit, your last visit, and visit in between in person, and then have remote ways to do it. I think the key is always remembering patient safety, making sure that we can oversee their clinical labs, their safety outcomes. I mean, everything in what we do, the drugs might work, the drugs might not work, but our job is to keep our patients safe, volunteer for our trials. So I think if we can figure out a way to do that remotely, which many doctors, whether it's in industry or whether it's just your general practitioners for us that are seeing doctor visits, are now done remotely. So I think it's actually exciting to be able to think of different ways to make clinical trials easier for the patients that are lending themselves to our clinical trials. And, you know, they may or may not help themselves, but they're helping advance science. So I think anything that we can do to help them is good. And COVID gave us that platform to be able to at least think about it.
That's a really good point about they're helping us and helping them. You know, it's kind of a hand in hand type of endeavor. So
yeah, it really is. I mean, these patients come into our trials and of course they're trying to help themselves, but many of them know that they may or may not get any benefit. So they are really doing it for people to follow them and also to help the science. So whatever we can do to make their lives easier in their assistance to us, I think is really important.
So back to 2014, when you started with Biohaven, and is that when you started with the clinical trials with Neurotech?
No, actually, I came to Biohaven from Bristol-Myers Squibb, and Bristol-Myers Squibb was the company in which we in-licensed Neurotech from. So myself, as well as our CEO, Vlad Chorich, and one of my main project managers or executive directors worked on Neurotech at BMS. So when we were able to bring it into Biohaven to work on it, it was super exciting. And we had a lot of the experience from the early trials of Neurotech to bring with us through phase three and then getting it approved. So it was kind of like bringing the baby back to Biohaven, and we were able to bring it all the way through to a filing and ultimately an approval. So it was kind of exciting to have it at BMS and then come to Biohaven and be able to work on the same drug that we knew was going to be fantastic.
Yeah, so you make a really good point there. I mean, I've heard this, that, like you said, it's your baby. And I find when I speak to clinical operations people, they really do view it as a win. You know, when you make it, it's like getting a touchdown or, you know, whatever.
The Super Bowl, a touchdown in the Super Bowl, for sure. Yeah.
And I mean, not that, I guess if you've been on a trial, a compound that just didn't make it for whatever reason, I guess it might be deflating. I don't know. Have you?
It is, you know, and I've worked in this industry for a long time, and the majority of compounds, unfortunately, don't make it. And you know, we recently had results for a study in multisystem atrophy, and I think the entire team was in tears. They were in tears that it didn't work, not because, you know, it's a drug and we could make money on it or whatever, but because of the patients. We had patients reaching out to it, and you hear the patient's stories. So I think more of us worked on drugs that have failed than drugs that have been successful. To work on one like Neurotech that has been so successful is awesome. It also gives the opportunity as a company to bring in more drugs to work on that may fall in its footpath and maybe not. But I think what we do is really try to find out, does it work or doesn't work? And either way, it helps the science. If it doesn't work, at least you know. And if it does, it's fantastic. But Neurotech was like one of those really exciting ones that we knew when we were at Bristol-Myers Squibb in phase two that we saw an effect. And so we were so excited to get it here because we had really high hopes that it would continue to work and really be a breakthrough therapy for migraine. And it has been.
So what is that like when you do that, you get that success, and then you have to hand your baby over to commercialization? Like, what is that like?
Well, you know, at bigger companies, I think it's different because you really hand it over and you're like, okay, and then you go on to the next thing and it's kind of sad. And then you're excited about something new. At Biohaven, because of our culture, we work really closely with BJ Jones and the commercial team. So, you know, they'll reach out to us and ask us questions about our clinical trial sites. We'll work with them. They involve us in their monthly meetings about how it's going. So it's actually been really exciting to work with our commercial team in quote, hand it over, because we've been completely part of the process. So that's exciting. And I think that's what is great about working in a smaller company, to be able to continue to follow it, even though our clinical trials are over.
That's a really good point. I mean, you're right. You're just not, what do they call it? Throwing it over the wall.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So I looked at the website. I think you have about 7 late stage trials going on. Most of them look like they were in phase three.
Yeah, we have a lot.
Yeah. So how are you managing all the data and the timelines? Like, what is your balance of using, you know, technology? And when I say technology, I mean the whole e-clinical data management thing,
right?
And outsourcing, or how is that possible?
Well, first of all, I have to give kudos to my team. My team is fantastic, and we've really been lucky to hire some of the best people in the industry to work on our clinical trials, which definitely helps. I do think we have some really good partnerships also with our CROs. We work with some small, some mid-size, and then some large CROs, especially if the study's global, you need a bigger CRO to help you. But I think our team really does a good job of working hand in hand with the CRO. Like you just said, we don't throw it over the fence to a CRO and kind of let them do their thing. We work with them. We have really good partnerships with them. The things that we do really well, we do ourselves. So we make relationships with our sites. We do all our study startup And we work with our CRO once the studies are started for them to do their clinical trial monitoring. I think it's really being able to hire the right people, involve the right CROs, and really have a partnership with them that makes it really smooth to run a big book of work in a small company.
So now, you know, as you mentioned, you've been in the industry for a while. You've been in a lot of roles. I know it's odd to think you've been doing in the same industry for a long time. I get it. But what is the major change you've seen in the clinical trials industry? Maybe just, I mean, you can go further back if you want, because like you even said the word subject, and you hardly ever hear people refer to participants as subjects anymore. But it's truly, that's the role, right?
Right.
Anyway, right. So if you want to elaborate on major changes you've seen in the industry, it can be from whenever time period or just the past 2 to 3 years.
So I think, you know, we're highly regulated. So major changes don't occur that often because we do have to follow all of the guidances out there, the FDA, the good GCPs. But I do think that, which is a good change, I think that we are thinking about the patient more. You know, every time we do our clinical trials and start thinking about what our protocols are going to look like, along with our primary outcome measures that we're looking at, we always are looking for some sort of patient-reported outcome because the drug looks like it's working in your outcome measure, but what does the patient feel? And is it's all about, does the patient feel better? Are we helping their daily life? Are we helping them feel better in their daily life? And are we making an impact? So I think there's a lot more push to be able to do that. I think that's both from the company perspective as well as from the FDA perspective. I know they often ask on our protocols, well, are you using a patient-reported outcome? Are you using an outcome that says what the patient feels their change has been? And I think that's super important. And throughout working in this industry since the late 80s, that definitely wasn't as popular of a thing to do as it is now. So I think it's really important. You know, you get a statistical outcome on a study, but now we're saying, all right, that's awesome, but does the patient feel it too? What's the clinical outcome? And are they feeling better in their daily life? And I think that's super important. So I'm really glad that the industry is looking more closely at that because I think it makes a big difference. And at the end of the day, if we all are suffering from any type of illness, whether it be migraine, whether it be obsessive compulsive disorder, we want to feel better ourselves. And I think the industry is moving more towards that than it was in the past.
Excellent point. And then lastly, what would you suggest to clinical operations professionals to keep top of mind moving forward?
So, you know, I think this is really popular now, but I think you got to always follow the science, right? Keep the patient at the top of your mind, follow the science. Like I think I mentioned before, our job is to see if a drug is efficacious and safe. And that's what we're trying to do. And at the end of the day, that's what we want to show. Like we were talking about, it may be safe, but it might not work. And I think that's just as important as a drug that does work. And I think just keeping that at the top of our minds that we want to show a certain the outcome that is true and real. And if it's good, it's great. If it's not, it's not. But keeping the science in mind, keeping the patient in mind and doing what's best for both is kind of what we need to keep doing. I think we do that anyway, but I think it always needs to be at the top of the mind. And if I'm thinking about what we think internally at Biohaven is your patient safety, it's all about patient safety. And we're doing our job if we're keeping our patients safe. So I think that's what we always have to keep at the top of our mind in any clinical research study that we do.
Well, thank you so much, Kim, for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you guys. I really appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you, Kim.
What if you had limitless access to customer insights, accelerated timelines, and set fees? At True Serum Network, we're fueled by connections in virtually every area of healthcare as part of MJH Life Sciences. The result? Audience-fed creative and more powerful content in less time. True Serum Network, releasing what's real. Find out more at TrueSerumNTWK.com.